Chapter 46. To Come Out of the Shadow. Nynaeve and the others heard distant shouts as they approached the buildings where the Damani were housed. The crowds were beginning to pick up, and there was a nervousness to the people in the street, an extra quickness to their step, an extra wariness in the way they glanced past Nynaeve in her lightning-paneled dress and the woman she held by a silver leash. Shifting her bundle nervously, Elaine peered toward the noise of shouts one street over where the golden hawk, clutching lightning, rippled in the wind. "What is happening?" "Nothing to do with us," Nynaeve said firmly. "You hope," Min added, "and so do I." She increased her pace, hurrying up the steps ahead of the others, and disappeared inside the tall stone house. Nynaeve shortened her grip on the leash. "Remember, Sita, you want us to make it through this safely as much as we do."
"I do,"
the Shan Shan woman said fervently. She kept her chin on her chest to hide her face.
"I will cause you no trouble, I swear."
As they turned up the gray stone steps, a Suldam and a Damani appeared at the head of the stairs, coming down as they went up. After one glance to make sure the woman in the collar was not Egwene, Nynaeve did not look at them again. She used the Eidam to keep Sita close by her side, so if the Damani sensed the ability to channel in one of them, she would think it was Sita. She felt sweat trickling down her spine, though, until she realized they were paying her no more attention than she gave them. All they saw was a dress with lightning panels and a gray dress, the women wearing them linked by the silver length of an Eidam. Just another leash holder with a leashed one, and a local girl hurrying along behind, with a bundle belonging to the Suldam. Nynaeve pushed open the door and they went in. Whatever the excitement beneath Turak's banner, it did not extend here, not yet. There were only women moving about in the entry hall, all easily placed by their dress. Three gray-dressed Damani with Suldam wearing the bracelets. Two women in dresses paneled with forked lightning stood talking, and three crossed the hall alone. Four dressed like men in plain dark woolens hurried on their way with trays. Min stood waiting down the entry hall when they went in. She glanced at them once, then started deeper into the house. Nynaeve guided Sita down the hall after Min, with Elaine scurrying along in their wake. No one gave them a second glance, it seemed to Nynaeve, but she thought the trickle of sweat down her backbone might become a river soon. She kept Sita moving quickly, so no one would have a chance for a good look, or worse, a question. With her eyes fixed on her toes, Sita needed so little urging that Nynaeve thought she would have been running, if not for the physical restraint of the leash. Near the back of the house, Min took a narrow stairs that spiraled upwards. Nynaeve pushed Sita up it ahead of her, all the way to the fourth floor. The ceilings were low there, the halls empty and silent, except for the soft sounds of weeping. Weeping seemed to fit the air of the chilly halls.
"This place," Elaine began, then shook her head. "It feels..."
"Yes, it does," Nynaeve said grimly. She glared at Sita, who kept her face down. A pallor of fear made the Shan Shan woman's skin paler than it was normally. Wordlessly, Min opened a door and went in, and they followed. The room beyond had been divided into smaller rooms by roughly made wooden walls with a narrow hallway running to a window. Nynaeve crowded after Min as she hurried to the last door on the right and pushed in. A slender, dark-haired girl in gray sat at a small table with her head resting on folded arms, but even before she looked up, Nynaeve knew it was Egwene. A ribbon of shining metal ran from the silver collar around Egwene's neck to a bracelet hanging on a peg on the wall. Her eyes widened at the sight of them, her mouth working silently. As Elaine closed the door, Egwene gave a sudden giggle and pressed her hands to her mouth to stifle it. The tiny room was more than crowded with all of them in it.
"I know I'm not dreaming," she said in a quivering voice. "Because if I was dreaming, you'd be Rand and Galad on tall stallions." "I have been dreaming. I thought Rand was here. I couldn't see him, but I thought..."
Her voice trailed off. "If you'd rather wait for them," Min said dryly.
"Oh, no. No, you are all beautiful. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Where did you come from? How did you do it? That dress, Nynaeve, and the Eidam, and who is...
She gave an abrupt squeak.
That's Sita! How...
Her voice hardened so that Nynaeve barely recognized it.
I'd like to put her in a pot of boiling water.
Sita had her eyes squeezed shut and her hands clutched her skirts. She was trembling.
What have they done to you? Elaine exclaimed. What could they do to make you want something like that?
Egwene never took her eyes off the Shan Chen woman.
I'd like to make her feel it. That's what she did to me. Made me feel like I was neck deep in...
She shuddered.
You do not know what it is like wearing one of these, Elaine. You don't know what they can do to you. I can never decide whether Sita is worse than Rena, but they're all hateful.
I think I know, Nynaeve said quietly. She could feel the sweat soaking Sita's skin, the cold tremors that shook her limbs. The yellow-haired Shan Chen was terrified. It was all she could do not to make Sita's terrors come true then and there.
Can you take this off of me?
Egwene asked, touching the collar.
You must be able to if you could put that one on.
Nynaeve channeled a pinpoint trickle. The collar on Egwene's neck provided anger enough, and if it had not, Sita's fear, the knowledge of how deserved it truly was, and her own knowledge of what she wanted to do to the woman would have done it. The collar sprang open and fell away from Egwene's throat. With an expression of wonder, Egwene touched her neck.
Put on my dress and coat, Nynaeve told her.
Elaine was already unbundling the clothes on the bed. We will walk out of here and no one will even notice you. She considered holding her contact with Saidar. She was certainly angry enough, and it felt so wonderful, but reluctantly she let it go. This was the one place in Falma where there was no chance of a Suldam and Damani coming to investigate if they sensed someone channeling, but they would certainly do so if a Damani saw a woman she thought was a Suldam with the glow of channeling around her.
I don't know why you aren't gone already. Alone here, even if you could not figure out how to get that thing off you, you could have just picked it up and run.
As Min and Elaine hurriedly helped her change into Nynaeve's old dress, Egwene explained about moving the bracelet from where a Suldam left it, and how channeling made her sick unless a Suldam wore the bracelet. Just that morning, she had discovered how the collar could be opened without the power, and found that touching the catch with the intention of opening it made her hand knot into uselessness. She could touch it as much as she wanted so long as she did not think of undoing the catch. The merest hint of that, though, and... Nynaeve felt sick herself. The bracelet on her wrist made her sick. It was too horrible. She wanted it off her wrist before she learned more about Eidam, before she perhaps learned something that would make her feel soiled forever for having worn it. Unfastening the silver cuff, she pulled it loose, snapped it closed, and hung it on one of the pegs.
Don't think that means you can shout for help now.
She shook a fist under Sita's nose.
I can still make you wish you were never born if you open your mouth, and I do not need that bloody thing.
You do not mean to leave me here with it, Sita said in a whisper. You cannot. Tie me, gag me so I cannot give an alarm, please.
Egwene gave a mirthless laugh. Leave it on her. She won't call for help even without a gag. You'd better hope whoever finds you will remove the Eidam and keep your little secret, Sita. Your dirty secret.
What are you talking about? Elaine said.
I have thought about it a great deal, Egwene said. Thinking was all I could do when they left me alone up here. Suldam claim they develop an affinity after a few years. Most of them can tell when a woman is channeling whether they're leashed to her or not. I wasn't sure, but Sita proves it.
Proves what? Elaine demanded, and then her eyes widened in sudden realization, but Egwene went on.
Nynaeve, Eidam only work on women who can channel. Don't you see? Suldam can channel the same as Damani.
Sita groaned through her teeth, shaking her head in violent denial. A Suldam would die before admitting she could channel, even if she knew, and they never trained the ability, so they cannot do anything with it, but they can channel.
I told you, Min said. That collar shouldn't have worked on her.
She was doing up the last buttons down Egwene's back. Any woman who couldn't channel would be able to beat you silly while you tried to control her with it.
How can that be? Nynaeve said. I thought the Shan Chan put leashes on any woman who can channel.
All of those they find, Egwene told her. But those they can find are like you and me and Elaine. We were born with it, ready to channel whether anyone taught us or not.
But what about Shan Chan girls who aren't born with the ability but who could be taught?
Not just any woman can become a leash holder.
Renna thought she was being friendly telling me about it. It is apparently a feast day in Shan Chan villages when the Suldam come to test the girls. They want to find any like you and me and leash them, but they let all the others put on a bracelet to see if they can feel what the poor woman in the collar feels. Those who can are taken away to be trained as Suldam. They are the women who could be taught.
Sita was moaning under her breath.
No, 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 over and over again.
I know she is horrible, Elaine said, but I feel as if I should help her somehow. She could be one of our sisters, only the Shan Chan have twisted it all.
Nynaeve opened her mouth to say they had better worry about helping themselves, and the door opened.
What is going on here? Renna demanded, stepping into the room. An audience?
She stared at Nynaeve, hands on hips.
I never gave permission for anyone else to link with my pet, Tuli. I do not even know who you...
Her eyes fell on Egwene. Egwene wearing Nynaeve's dress instead of Damani gray. Egwene with no collar around her throat, and her eyes grew as big as saucers. She never had a chance to yell.
Before anyone else could move, Egwene snatched the pitcher from her washstand and smashed it into Renna's midriff. The pitcher shattered, and the Suldam lost all her breath in a gurgling gasp and doubled over. As she fell, Egwene leaped on her with a snarl, shoving her flat, grabbing for the collar she had worn where it still lay on the floor, snapping it around the other woman's neck. With one jerk on the silver leash, Egwene pulled the bracelet from the peg and fitted it to her own wrist. Her lips were pulled back from her teeth, her eyes fixed on Renna's face with a terrible concentration. Kneeling on the Suldam's shoulders, she pressed both hands over the woman's mouth. Renna gave a tremendous convulsion, and her eyes bulged in her face. Hoarse sounds came from her throat, screams held back by Egwene's hands. Her heels drummed on the floor.
Stop it, Egwene! Nynaeve grabbed Egwene's shoulder, pulling her off of the other woman.
Egwene, stop it! That isn't what you want!
Renna lay gray-faced and panting, staring wildly at the ceiling. Suddenly, Egwene threw herself against Nynaeve, sobbing raggedly at her breast.
She hurt me, Nynaeve! She hurt me! They all did! They hurt me and hurt me until I did what they wanted! I hate them! I hate them for hurting me! And I hate them because I couldn't stop them from making me do what they wanted!
I know, Nynaeve said gently. She smoothed Egwene's hair. It is all right to hate them, Egwene. It is. They deserve it. But it isn't all right to let them make you like they are.
Sita's hands were pressed to her face. Renna touched the collar at her throat disbelievingly with a shaking hand.
Egwene straightened, brushing her tears away quickly.
I'm not. I am not like them. She almost clawed the bracelet off of her wrist and threw it down. I'm not, but I wish I could kill them.
They deserve it. Min was staring grimly at the two Suldam.
Rand would kill someone who did a thing like that, Elaine said. She seemed to be steeling herself. I am sure he would.
Perhaps they do, Nynaeve said, and perhaps he would. But men often mistake revenge and killing for justice. They seldom have the stomach for justice.
She had often sat in judgment with the women's circle. Sometimes men came before them, thinking women might give them a better hearing than the men of the village council, but men always thought they could sway the decision with eloquence or pleas for mercy. The women's circle gave mercy where it was deserved, but justice always. And it was the wisdom who pronounced it. She picked up the bracelet Egwene had discarded and closed it. I would free every woman here if I could, and destroy every last one of these.
but since I cannot... She slipped the bracelet over the same peg that held the other one, then addressed herself to the Suldam.
Not leash-holders any longer, she told herself.
Perhaps, if you are very quiet, you'll be left alone here long enough to manage to remove the collars. The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and it may be that you've done enough good to counterbalance the evil you have done, enough that you will be allowed to remove them. If not, you will be found eventually. And I think whoever finds you will ask a great many questions before they remove those collars. I think perhaps you will learn at first hand the life you have given to other women. That is justice, she added to the others. Rena wore a fixed stare of horror. Sita's shoulders shook as she sobbed into her hands. Nynaeve hardened her heart. It is justice, she told herself. It is, and herded the others out of the room. No one paid any more attention to them going out than they had coming in. Nynaeve supposed she had the Suldam dress to thank for that, but she could not wait to change into something else, anything else. The dirtiest rag would feel cleaner on her skin. The girls were silent, walking close behind her until they were out on the cobblestone street again. She did not know if it was what she had done or the fear that someone might stop them. She scowled. Would they have felt better if she had let them work themselves up to cutting the women's throats? Horses, Egwene said. We will need horses. I know the stable where they took Bella, but I don't think we can get to her. We have to leave Bella here, Nynaeve told her. We are leaving by ship. Where is everybody? Min said, and suddenly Nynaeve realized the street was empty. The crowds were gone, not a sign of them to be seen. Every shop and window along the street were shuttered tight. But up the street from the harbor came a formation of Shan Chan soldiers, 100 or more in ordered ranks, with an officer at their head in his painted armor. They were still halfway down the street from the women, but they marched with a grim, implacable step, and it seemed to Nynaeve that every eye was fixed on her. That's ridiculous. I can't see their eyes inside those helmets, and if anybody had given an alarm, it would be behind us. She stopped anyway. There are more behind us, Min murmured. Nynaeve could hear those boots now. I don't know which will reach us first. Nynaeve took a deep breath. They are nothing to do with us. She looked beyond the approaching soldiers to the harbor, filled with tall, boxy Shan Chan ships. She could not make out spray. She prayed it was still there and ready. We will walk right past them. Light, I hope we can. What if they want you to join them, Nynaeve? Elaine asked. You are wearing that dress. If they start asking questions... I will not go back, Egwene said grimly. I'll die first. Let me show them what they've taught me. To Nynaeve's eye, a golden nimbus suddenly seemed to surround her. No, she said, but it was too late. With a roar like thunder, the street under the first ranks of Shan Chan erupted, dirt and cobblestones and armored men thrown aside like spray from a fountain. Still glowing, Egwene spun to stare up the street, and the thunderous roar was repeated. Dirt rained down on the women. Shouting Shan Chan soldiers scattered in good order to shelter in alleys and behind stoops. In moments they were all out of sight, except for those who lay around the two large holes marring the street. Some of those stirred feebly, and moans drifted along the street. Nynaeve threw up her hands, trying to look in both directions at once. You fool! We are trying not to attract attention! There was no hope of that now. She only hoped they could manage to work their way around the soldiers to the harbor through the alleys. The Damani must know, too, now. They could not have missed that. I won't go back to that collar, Egwene said fiercely. I won't! Look out! Min shouted. With a shrill whine, a fireball as big as a horse arched into the air over the rooftops and began to fall, directly toward them. Run! Nynaeve shouted, and threw herself into a dive toward the nearest alleyway, between two shuttered shops. She landed awkwardly on her stomach with a grunt, losing half her breath as the fireball struck. Hot wind washed over her down the narrow passage. Gulping air, she rolled onto her back and stared back into the street.
The cobblestones where they had been standing were chipped and cracked and blackened in a circle 10 paces across. Elaine was crouched just inside another alley on the other side of the street. Of Min and Egwene there was no sign. Nynaeve clapped a hand to her mouth in horror. Elaine seemed to understand what she was thinking. The daughter heir shook her head violently and pointed down the street. They had gone that way. Nynaeve heaved a sigh of relief that immediately turned to a growl. Fool girl. We could have gotten by them. There was no time for recriminations, though. She scooted to the corner and peered cautiously around the edge of the building. A head-sized fireball flashed down the street toward her. She leaped back just before it exploded against the corner where her own head had been, showering her with stone chips. Anger had her awash in the one power before she was aware of it. Lightning flashed out of the sky, striking somewhere up the street with a crash near the origin of the fireball. Another jagged bolt split the sky, and then she was running down the alley. Behind her, lightning lanced the mouth of the alley.
If Domon doesn't have that ship waiting, I'll... Light, let us all reach it safely.
Bale Domon jerked erect as lightning streaked across the slate-gray sky, striking somewhere in the town. Then again. There do not be enough clouds for that. Something rumbled loudly up in the town, and a ball of fire smashed into a rooftop just above the docks, throwing splintered slates in wide arcs. The docks had emptied themselves of people a while back, except for a few Shanshan. They ran wildly now, drawing swords and shouting. A man appeared from one of the warehouses with a Grom at his side, running to keep up with the beast's long leaps as they vanished into one of the streets leading up from the water. One of Doman's crewmen jumped for an axe and swung it high over a mooring cable. In two strides, Domon seized the upraised axe with one hand and the man's throat with the other.
Spray do stay till I do say sail, Edwin Cole.
They're gone mad, Captain,
Yaren shouted. An explosion sent echoes rumbling across the harbor, sending the gulls into screaming circles, and lightning flickered again, crashing to earth inside Falma.
The Domani will kill us all. Let us go while they're busy killing one another. They'll never notice us till we are gone.
I did give my word, Domon said.
He wrenched the axe from Cole's hand and threw it clattering onto the deck.
I did give my word.
Hurry, woman, he thought. Aes Sedai, whatever you be, hurry.
Jeffrom Bornhold eyed the lightning flashing over Falma and dismissed it from his mind. Some huge flying creature, one of the Shanshan monsters, no doubt, flew wildly to escape the bolts. If there was a storm, it would hinder the Shanshan as much as it did him. Nearly treeless hills, a few topped by sparse thickets, still hid the town from him and him from it. His 1,000 men lay spread out to either side of him, one long mounted rank rippling along the hollows between hills. The cold wind tossed their white cloaks and flapped the banner at Bornhald's side, the wavy rayed golden sun of the Children of the Light.
Go now, Byr, he commanded.
The gaunt-faced man hesitated, and Bornhald put a snap into his voice.
I said go, child Byr.
Byr touched hand to heart and bowed.
As you command, my lord captain.
He turned his horse away, every line of him showing reluctance. Bornhald put Byr out of his mind. He had done what he could there. He raised his voice.
The Legion will advance at a walk.
With a creak of saddles, the long line of white-cloaked men moved slowly toward Falma. Rand peered around the corner at the approaching Shanshan, then ducked back into the narrow alley between two stables with a grimace. They would be there soon. There was blood crusted on his cheek. The cuts he had from Turok burned, but there was nothing to be done for them now. Lightning flashed across the sky again. He felt the rumble of its plummet through his boots.
What in the name of the light is happening?
Close, Ingtar said. The Horn of Elia must be saved, Rand.
Despite the Shanshan, despite the lightning and strange explosions down in the town proper, he seemed preoccupied with his own thoughts. Matt and Perrin and Hurin were down at the other end of the alley, watching another Shanshan patrol. The place where they had left the horses was close now, if they could only reach it.
She's in trouble, Rand muttered.
Egwene. There was an odd feeling in his head as if pieces of his life were in danger. Egwene was one piece, one thread of the cord that made his life, but there were others, and he could feel them threatened. Down there in Falma. And if any of those threads was destroyed, his life would never be complete the way it was meant to be. He did not understand it, but the feeling was sure and certain.
One man could hold 50 here, Ingtar said.
The two stables stood close together, with barely room for the pair of them to stand side by side between them.
One man holding 50 at a narrow passage.
Not a bad way to die.
Songs have been made about less.
There's no need for that, Rand said, I hope. A rooftop in the town exploded.
How am I going to get back in here? I have to reach her.
Reach them? Shaking his head, he peeked around the corner again. The Seanchan were closer, still coming.
I never knew what he was going to do, Ingtar said softly, as if talking to himself.
He had his sword out, testing the edge with his thumb.
A pale little man you didn't seem to really notice, even when you were looking at him.
Take him inside Valdara, I was told.
Inside the fortress.
I did not want to, but I had to do it. You understand?
I had to.
I never knew what he intended until he shot that arrow. I still don't know if it was meant for the Amalyn or for you.
Rand felt a chill. He stared at Ingtar.
What are you saying? He whispered. Studying his blade, Ingtar did not seem to hear.
Humankind is being swept away everywhere. Nations fail and vanish. Dark friends are everywhere, and none of these Southlanders seem to notice or care. We fight to hold the borderlands, to keep them safe in their houses, and every year, despite all we can do, the blight advances. And these Southlanders think Trollocs are myths, and Murdrall a gleeman's tale.
He frowned and shook his head.
It seemed the only way. We would be destroyed for nothing, defending people who did not even know or care. It seemed logical. Why should we be destroyed for them, when we could make our own peace? Better the shadow, I thought, than useless oblivion, like Carolane, or Harden, or... It seemed so logical then.
Rand grabbed Ingtar's lapels.
You aren't making any sense. He can't mean what he's saying. He can't. Say it plain, whatever you mean. You're talking crazy.
For the first time, Ingtar looked at Rand. His eyes shone with unshed tears.
You are a better man than I, shepherd or lord. A better man.
The prophecy says, let who sounds me think not of glory but only salvation. It was my salvation I was thinking of. I would sound the horn and lead the heroes of the ages against Sheol Ghul. Surely that would have been enough to save me. No man can walk so long in the shadow that he cannot come again to the light. That is what they say. Surely that would have been enough to wash away what I have been and done.
Oh, light, Ingtar.
Rand released his hold on the other man and sagged back against the stable wall.
I think wanting to is enough. I think all you have to do is stop being one of them.
Ingtar flinched as if Rand had said it out.
Dark friend. Rand, when Varen brought us here with the portal stone, I lived other lives. Sometimes I held the horn, but I never sounded it. I tried to escape what I'd become, but I never did. Always there was something else required of me. Always something worse than the last, until I was... You are ready to give it up to save a friend. Think not of glory. Oh, light, help me.
Rand did not know what to say. It was as if Egwene had told him she had murdered children. Too horrible to be believed. Too horrible for anyone to admit unless it was true. Too horrible. After a time, Ingtar spoke again firmly.
There has to be a price, Rand. There is always a price. Perhaps I can pay it here.
Ingtar,
It is every man's right, Rand, to choose when to sheathe the sword. Even one like me.
Before Rand could say anything, Urin came running down the alley.
The patrol turned aside, he said hurriedly. Down into the town. They seem to be gathering down there. Matt and Perrin went on.
He took a quick look down the street and pulled back.
We'd better do the same, Lord Rand, Lord Ingtar. Those bug-headed Seanchan are almost here.
Go, Rand,
Ingtar said. He turned to face the street and did not look at Rand or Huron again.
Take the horn where it belongs. I always knew the Amalyn should have given you the charge. But all I ever wanted was to keep Shinar whole, to keep us from being swept away and forgotten.
I know, Ingtar.
Rand drew a deep breath.
The light shine on you, Lord Ingtar of House Shinoa, and may you shelter in the palm of the Creator's hand.
He touched Ingtar's shoulder.
The last embrace of the mother welcome you home.
Huron gasped.
Thank you,
Ingtar said softly. Attention seemed to go out of him. For the first time since the night of the Trolloc raid on Faldara, he stood as he had when Rand first saw him, confident and relaxed. Content. Rand turned and found Huron staring at him, staring at both of them.
It is time for us to go. But Lord Ingtar
does what he has to,
Rand said sharply.
But we go.
Huron nodded, and Rand trotted after him. Rand could hear the steady tread of the Seanchan's boots now. He did not look back.